You know what time it is? That's right, it's a new ad. And this time I have two amazing stories for you to check out. First one is about a friend Saving Throw, who writes a story called So When Am I a Hero? It's a system apocalypse that is quite frankly amazing. I don't like system apocalypses usually, and I devoured that one. So go and check it out. There's a link below the podcast. The second one is from another friend of mine, because I have two friends, called The Infinity Dungeon by Reject Humanity. Premise is actually pretty cool. A guy goes hiking on the Appalachian Trails and stumbles into the only and first dungeon in the world, and he's the only person on Earth with a system, at least for a while. All right, go check him out. I appreciate it a lot, and I'll see you next time.
When it comes to characterization, I think it's in the details. So I noticed that as the cast assembled around Will, it was the little things about them, their quirks, their funny little oddities that I think brought the story to life. So the next time you interact with a friend or a colleague or your parents, just pay attention to their strange quirks. Think to yourself, what makes them them? What are some characteristics that I see, you know, pop up in them that I don't see in other people? And that uniqueness that you put into your character will speak volumes to the reader.
This is the Crit RPG Podcast, your one-stop shop for everything Lit RPG, Progression Fantasy, and Royal Road. Hi everyone, and welcome to the Crit RPG Podcast, the only podcast that puts some iron in your blood. With me today is Rhys Brooks, who is the author of Iron Blooded, that you can read right now on Royal Road, and later on this year, I think, published by Aethon. Is that correct?
Yeah, we actually got April 8th as our release date yesterday, so I'm super excited.
That's not this year, it's next year.
But yeah, but hey, yeah. Spring's a good time to launch, and it's 2 days after my birthday, so no complaints.
Absolutely, yeah. Oh, it's shortly before my birthday, too, so you're welcome, and you're very free to send me a copy.
Definitely. Absolutely.
Cool. No. Yeah, like, Rhys, who are you?
Yeah, right? I ask myself that every day. Well,
yeah, me too.
I live with my wife in the mid-US, and I have four cats, all of which are rambunctious and adorable. I've been writing for about 20 years, and now I get to do it for a living. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty cool.
Awesome. Yeah. And, wow, 20 years. That's a long time. Holy shit.
Oh, yeah. When I was writing as a kid, everything I wrote was garbage. God. Sometimes I still find it, and I'm like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, I mean, we can't all be like child prodigies like Actus or like X-Karin or whatever. So
yeah. Or like, was it Christopher Paolini? He wrote Aragorn when he was 16. I love that series.
Yeah. I mean, like, people were like, this reads like someone who was like 16 when he wrote. I'm like, yeah.
Well, you're right.
Yeah. Yeah.
More than you know.
I don't mean to throw any shade, and I don't want to say anything negative about him, but like the fact that his parents are publishers really helped.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. A little bit of nepotism here and there, you know, just adapt.
Yeah. But on the other hand, like, it's a coherent book. I mean, sure, the end of the fourth book is basically Lord of the Rings, but I mean, like, still, I liked it. I really liked it as a kid when I read it.
Oh, yeah.
And
the quality improves too, in my opinion. Well, I'm a fan of the series, but in my opinion, Eldis picks up in quality a lot, and I feel like he catches his stride a bit. But yeah, I think it's a good series for the heart, and I enjoy rereading it every once in a while.
Yeah, I think like the copy that I have is like completely like ripped and torn, kind of like almost broken. Yeah, I read that book like 4 or 5 times when I was a kid because I really like Dragon Rider stories. There's a German book called Drachenreiter, so Dragon Rider in English. By a lady called Cornelia Funke. And it's just a wonderful story. I have that book 4 times because I lent it 3 times and I kind of like forgot to whom, and then they all came back. And I really fucking love that story. It's really, really good. So I don't know. But yeah, Dragon Rider stories are amazing. Also, like, you know, right, Sean Wilson's Dawn of the Last Dragon Rider, look up here, right?
Yeah.
That book deserves some more love. But Yeah, okay. So now that all your cats, four of your cats, and your wife have gotten you into a writing mood, you've started writing what and why and how.
Yeah, well, I can start with the origin story. So, you know, I'd always been writing and I wanted to be a published author. I knew that. But I went into tech because, you know, STEM is a safe bet. And I did like what I did. I was a senior engineer when I got laid off last year in the tech layoffs. Oof. The big tech layoffs hit everybody. My whole team, sadly, got dismissed. Now, we did get severance, so, you know, no complaints here. But, man, the market was all of a sudden flooded with a bunch of mid to senior level engineers. And we were like, okay, well, what now? We're all standing shoulder to shoulder, fighting, you know, like dogs over scraps for the same jobs. That's not going to work. And so I kept applying, you know, I tried to stay positive. My wife was supportive through the whole thing. She understood, you know, and she was working. So it was her supporting us for a while. And I think that that's something, you know, that's something I want to point out and commend. You know, if you lose your job and your partner is helping support you in the household, it's not an easy job, but she did it very well and she was extraordinarily gracious. So I'll always be grateful to her. But anyway, so, I did a lot of interviews, but we weren't getting a lot of offers. When I went on forums, I was seeing the same things from all the other engineers. And I knew that the market was bad and it would be down for a couple years. So I had been reading Lit RPG and Progression Fantasy for a while. And I was reading all these posts on the subreddits about people making it, you know, and how the barrier of entry was a bit lower, than you don't need to go through the whole querying process and everything to get your story out there like you do to trad publishing. So I said, you know what, I want to try it. And I was sitting on the couch when I had this idea. I was thinking, you know, I love Lit RPG and I love isekai, but what if instead of the, you know, your typical isekai story, you had a soldier, you know, a guy who became a soldier. And then you had dialogue and sort of like a group of people like Black Company. I love Black Company, the dark humor, the, you know, the fighting scenes, the battles, everything. So it's like, heck. And then Will just showed up in my head and he hasn't left me alone since. He needs his story to be told.
Cool. That's awesome. Yeah. And you sat down and started writing and then that was it.
Yeah, absolutely. It took me a while to get his voice down, but he was like, I don't know if other writers experience this, but my characters will like tap the inside of my skull, like, get this down. I need you to tell my story. I was like, all right, man, I'm writing as fast as I can.
I've never had that, but I have something like that, but it's different. We could talk about it later.
Sounds like you should get that checked out. No, I'm kidding.
Come again?
I said, sounds like you should get that checked out.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe. Or maybe you should get it checked out. Yeah, maybe, right. How about that?
Then they'd institutionalize me and no more writing.
Or maybe it's like a therapy, like, yeah, you need to let them out. Like, you need to let them out. There's someone in your skull. Okay. No, but like, I mean, that's dope. Just keep writing. So tell everyone who's listening, kind of in broad strokes, what the story is about.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you have a guy who gets transported into a fantasy world. And before the story begins, he's spending about 4 weeks trying to learn to survive. So, you know, he's stealing food just to try to live. He's learning about the system and leveling, and everyone else around him seems to have a system. So when the story begins, he's in a wagon, having gotten a quest from an unknown stranger who was dying. And he was told to go to the front lines and to become a soldier. That's a profession he can do, you know? Mm-hmm. So he says, all right, I'll do it. But there is this deep underlying mystery underneath the whole series. If you have read the first book and you know what's going on, you're an anathema. Like, you're supposed to read it and go, what the hell? And that's what pretty much everyone did if you look at the comments in the epilogue. I will give you the answer to some questions, but not many.
Okay.
Max, you've read Gideon the Ninth, right?
I have it on my couch.
Yeah.
It's like right now I'm reading Meet Your Maker. So the book that Seth McDuffie and Jonathan McLean co-wrote. It's like right up there. I put it up there for the podcast. But I'm reading that right now, and then the next one is Gideon. What do you ask?
Yeah, it's good stuff, but I'll tell you what, pretty much read all the books that are out, and I still don't know what's going on, but it's incredible.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like that's one thing that she does really like, super, super well. Like, she doesn't ever tell you what's going on, and you know there's something like way bigger going on in the background, but it doesn't really quite matter, and everyone who knows about it is just cool with it, and you're like, yeah, but what's going on? And like, just don't worry about it. Just don't worry about it.
Like, yep. She won't answer everyone, that question.
Everyone else would have been like, I need to like info dump this right now. But no. Tamsin Muir has nerves of steel when it comes to exposition, I guess. So, yeah. So, actually, I read Gideon. I haven't read the next one. Hallow, the ninth. I haven't read that yet. It's still lying there. I'm like, damn. But yeah, Gideon the Ninth is like a very, very freaking good book. It's I didn't like it when I read it, but then the ending happened. I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah,
and, it just doesn't get out of my head. So
yeah, absolutely. And I would say that the second book is just as good, if not better. But and I won't spoil anything. I will just say you have to read it all the way through. And about 2/3 of the way through, you clutch your head and go, oh. And you start to get what everything else was about a little bit.
Oh, okay.
She spoon feeds it to you. So that's sort of what I'm doing with Iron Blooded. You know, there's lots of action. There's huge battle scenes. I love war history, and I've studied it for maybe about 12 years. So put in a little bit of my knowledge. Granted, this is a bunch of dudes fighting monsters, right? So it's that's something we don't have documented yet. But in the event of a system apocalypse, you won't see me. I'll die in 3 seconds. Good luck, though.
I will also probably be dead. Yeah.
See in the afterlife.
It's like, should I put the stats in here? Like, should I really, though?
Yeah, right? I wouldn't even get to see the window. I'd just probably get like stomped by a random troll running by.
Yeah, it's like, nope, I'm out. But I kind of want to ask you like about the slow trickle and feeding. Because like it's something I tried in Torchbearer, and it didn't go super well, mostly because I didn't know what I was doing. So what are some of your like techniques that you do with that?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I needed to learn how to outline. I know that there's pantsing and plotting, and for the longest time, I was bouncing between the two, trying to find what works. But honestly, I realized that I need a hybrid. So if I plot everything out, I'm going to get bored. My ADHD brain does not want to write it if I know everything that's going to happen. So what I did was for Iron Blooded, I wrote the bare bones skeleton plot. So I knew the major beats of the story. I knew what powers I wanted Will to get and where I wanted him to end up at the end of the book and the subsequent books. But I let him sort of guide the journey in getting there, and that's where I think character voice is so important, because you want your character to speak through you. You want the reader to forget that someone is writing it and just start to see the scenes moving in their head, and that's when you know you've really got that flow. And I think it's a sort of culmination of things, but it's a skill that can be learned, so don't be discouraged if you're, you know, starting and then you're dropping it again and you're just, I can't get this right. And, you know, it happens to all of us. And I have a graveyard of ideas that I discarded. And you better believe I ran upstairs to tell my wife how upset I was halfway through writing Iron Blooded. It just doesn't work. Blah, blah, blah. 6K followers and a publishing deal later, we're fine.
Yeah. God. Yeah. Or like, could also work the other way around. Like, just whatever. Like, I think it's something that's like super important to me that people like keep thinking about this, and it's hard for me to like remember this too, right? To not just write for the deal, but write because you like it first and foremost. And sometimes that feels hard for me, like, too, because, like, yeah, look, like, the third relaunch, like, the second relaunch of Torchbearer didn't really do all that well, right? So it's like, can I even be doing this? Should I be doing this? And all the, like, comparison stuff that, like, comes up. But, again, it's, like, super important to kind of, like, concentrate on what do you want? Like, do you want to keep writing this? And just do it. It's fine. Like, you don't need to earn money out of this. Like, it's okay. And at some point, you're going to be done, and then you're going to write something else with everything you've learned. So that's okay. I think that's my personal opinion on it, right? I mean, like you said, like, you've been writing for like 20 years. So you've got some stories.
Just cooking in the back of my head. Yeah, funny story I tell. About 10 years ago, I had a romance space opera epic fantasy that I got an agent for, and I went through the whole song and dance with one of the big four that I will not name. But we got pretty far in negotiations, and then last minute, they threw their hands up and backed out and said, oh, we're scared. We don't know if, you know, science fantasy will really sell. Granted, this was before Red Rising had come out even. So so they backed out, and I was like, no. And so for the longest time, I just sort of took a break from it and never thought I'd get published. But, you know, hey, maybe that story will see the light of day one day. Maybe.
I mean, yeah, if you got it lying around, like, sure, you can like bring it up again, and like, yeah, the market is kind of like there for it now more than before. And I think publishers are also like taking notice of like lit RPG as a genre in general. I mean, like, I'm going to Frankfurt next month, Frankfurt Book Fair, which is like an international book selling thing. And whenever I go, like, hey, by the way, I'm selling lit RPG books here, they're like, oh, really? Because like now that you know, Dungeon Crawler Carl has like gotten the launch and it's doing quite well, and that sort of stuff, people are like paying more attention, I think. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the news that he might be getting a TV show, which I'm hopeful for eventually, that could definitely boost the industry. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. I always want to say, like, it's been optioned. That doesn't actually mean anything yet.
Exactly. Yeah. Agreed. Yep. Yeah. All we have is the announcement that, people with that kind of power are looking at it. That's it. So
exactly.
Whether they even
we've paid you money to be able to look at it and go like, do we want to do this?
Good for press, but sort of up in the air now. But I did mention earlier, and I'll say it again, I'm really excited about Aethon's new catalog of Webtoon releases. I can read a Webtoon in like a week. So I'm like, I'm looking forward to some of the ones coming out. Like, we got some good adaptations.
Yeah, like, I'm really looking forward to them too. Like, I think there's a bunch of them that are coming up. And I also know that there's going to be a couple of new announcements soon. That's going to be nice. So people are looking forward to that, like some really, really big ones. But yeah, we'll see. Seems like a pretty good time to be published.
Yeah, it sure does. I hope anybody that's listening that's, you know, trying to launch a book can take away something from this or any of the many podcasts in which there's advice. But we got a lot of new players popping up that are doing really well in Rising Stars, and can't wait to see what happens with them.
Yeah, totally. Like, I kind of want to ask, like, because I'm looking at my notes here, right? And you mentioned something about like character voice. I kind of want to ask you about that. But before that, I kind of want to like put it like a finishing line under what you said. And that, like, yeah, like new people are popping up every couple of days now, and Rising Stars is getting really full. So that's cool. It's fine. So I think people really should, you know, like, try their best and write what they can, and just, you know, put it online and see what goes. Because in the end, like, you're not gonna lose anything. Like, people are not gonna like hurt you. Unless, of course, you let them. Royal Road can be kind of harsh.
Oh, yeah. And take in mind, if you're receiving a lot of criticism on Royal Road, that people that get stuff for free tend to be a lot harsher than people that pay for it. So, yeah. You know, people can be harsh on Amazon, too, but probably not to the degree I've seen on Royal Road. So,
oh, you would be surprised.
Oh, really? Oh, geez.
Yeah. There's like there's like this, I forget who it was, this author, and she has like this guilty pleasure of like going on Amazon and looking at her like one-star reviews and looking at what else these people review, and some people review gift cards. It's like, well,
jeez,
you're an idiot.
Yep, so. Just a little bit. Man, I have some pretty funny comments or reviews. I got two favorites. One was a guy that left a comment, an angry comment saying, you know, I really feel like the author's making all of this up. I was like, man, he hit the nail on the head. And then my second favorite was a review that was left in which the person complained about grammar, which I will say I didn't discover Grammarly until halfway through. He's absolutely right. That criticism is 100% valid. But in his review complaining about the grammar, there were 4 typos. So I was like, man, you know, same.
Yeah. Oh my God. I know it wouldn't be good. We shouldn't be doing this, but sometimes I do wish there was like a moment where you could like reply to reviews. But like, thank you for your review. Let me just point out some stuff here.
Yeah. Drop some edits. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. But like, yeah, it's in the end, I really wish there was like a button to completely hide all of your reviews because you don't want to read them anyhow. Because like, yeah, like by now I know what's wrong with my story. So,
that's fair. Yep. And criticism can be helpful. I've actually found that there are plenty of people in the community that left comments that really helped me get what wasn't working. And it was my first time trying to write a lit RPG story. And I've only been reading lit RPG for like 6-7 months. So there were a few people that popped in and said, hey, you know, you can make your system a little better if you XYZ. And that actually made a big difference. But it's constructive criticism versus people that are just like, I'm angry about this and I'm going to say so. Like, all right.
Yeah,
thanks, Joe from California.
Or Florida.
Florida man.
Florida man. Florida man writes Royal Road comments. But I mean, like, now I want to talk to you about like what we're talking about, like improving stuff. Characterization. You mentioned it's super important, right? And not all of us have the condition that you have where the characters speak in their heads. So what's your, like, what's one tip? Or I should rather say, first off, characterization, like what's something you can give as a tip? And the next question then would be, what's one piece of advice that you've gotten as a writer? The best piece.
Good questions here. Well, when it comes to characterization, I think it's in the details. So I noticed that as the cast assembled around Will, it was the little things about them, their quirks, their funny little oddities that I think brought the story to life. And people say they really like the supporting cast of Iron-Blooded. So, you know, I'm glad for that. I'm grateful. It could have gone either way, right? People could have been like, I hate these guys. but so... If you know, the next time you interact with a friend or a colleague or your parents, just pay attention to their strange quirks. Think to yourself, what makes them them? And, you know, what are some characteristics that I see, you know, pop up in them that I don't see in other people? And that uniqueness that you put into your character will speak volumes to the reader.
I think... who was that? That was Alex Karn. He said that he likes to give characters rules. So, you know, like this character always has to start his sentence with this sort of sound. Or that character has 2 rules. They don't eat carrots and... also, whenever they speak, they have like a iambic pentameter or whatever, right? That could be fun. I think it's an easy way to like get some of these like quirks in, especially if you like ground them in reality and, you know, take stock of your environment and learn from your parents and friends and lovers and enemies.
Yeah. Yep. Just sort of taking in the little details.
Yeah.
You know, so. Yeah. And like, sometimes the details are weird. Like sometimes you'll be like, I don't know why that guy does that. I've been friends with him for 12 years. But, you know.
Yeah. Be aware this might ruin your friendship.
Yeah, absolutely.
For the characterization, it actually works super well because like there's some rules that just make writing characters way easier. In band, I have like, Waverly and Victor are like contrasts of each other that also complement each other. So Waverly just like has run-on sentences, and even her like internal monologue is like a run-on sentence. And Victor's always like very short and succinct. So like that's like something that I have as my rules for those two. But I was kind of also asking about this because sometimes it is kind of hard to actually interrogate your characters to that level, especially if you have been writing for a while, because you're afraid that when you find out what they actually really want, the book isn't going to hold up.
Yeah, right? They can gain power. Actually, it's Sarah J. Maas that said that. She mentioned that her main character, Selena Sardothian, the assassin, she's super, super strong-willed. And so sometimes, you know, when she was writing, the character does not want to conform to the script. And that will happen if you have a strong character. But, you know, and people say there are different methods. Some people say interview your characters, and that can work. But if you're struggling with that and you're feeling that it's a little bit robotic, try to make it more like a dialogue. It sounds insane. And it will to anybody around you at the time, so make sure you're alone. But try to have a conversation with them. And just imagine how would they respond. You can type it out, you know. What would they say to me? What would their thoughts on my lunch be, you know? Or would they be impatient? Would they be standing against the wall with their arms folded, drawn in? Would they be pacing, impatient? Would they be lounging, smiling, smirking? You know, the little details.
There's one strategy that's kind of like this. More technique, and it's. I first encountered it in David Corbett's The Art of Character, and he suggests writing scenes that the readers will never see. You know, like basically childhood scenes. Like how does this childhood wound then somehow make this character tick in the way that he does? Or why does he do it? And it's not like a prescriptive thing, right? So you have to like have written some of the character a little bit. You have to know the understand the predicament that they're in the current moment to understand their past. And what I like to do is also I like to really identify like, hey, what's the core need of this character? Like, what do they really want, right? Is it like freedom from others, or is it like connection? And there's like five or eight like basic psychological needs, and you can mix and match them a little bit, and it always kind of comes out a little bit different because it's tinged with the desire of the character itself. Like yes, sure, most of my characters like want to have like connection and friendship, but that comes out differently depending on the character, right? So is it just like, don't want to lose someone, or do you want to gain something? Or is it like, what sort of connection? Is it a romantic connection or not romantic connection? Is it maybe connection to their peers at work? Like that sort of stuff, right? So you can, just as humans are manifold and very, very different from each other, you can make characters that have the same core need, but express it in a different way. And once you know this need, then you can kind of find out how does that character act when that core need gets denied, right? And then you need to find out why. Why does this character act in a certain way? And then do they want to keep going afterwards, and to come to the end of this, like, kind of aside, that's why I said it was dangerous, because sometimes you find out that this particular character just doesn't want to keep going. It's okay. It's done. It's over. Whatever. Right? So then you need a new character. And if you realize that at page 300, you're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful and poetic in a way. But I think there's a lot of important takeaways there. And yeah, definitely, I do think that sometimes characterization gets a little overlooked, depending on the genre. and, you know, in Lit RPG and progression fantasy, we love our pacing. I really like fast-paced work. And sometimes the characterization is there. Sometimes maybe it takes a back seat to some of the other elements, like numbers go up, dopamine hits, or, you know, combat. But when it's there and it all comes together, it gets me real hype about a book.
Yeah, or you could, you know, like write like a 250,000 word exploration of PTSD with lots of combat, but very little pacing, because you kind of forget a core theme in your story and everything just kind of happens and there's no real point to any of it. So that's a thing that you shouldn't be doing.
It sounds like you're speaking from experience.
What? That's slander.
Oh, God, that's funny.
I will probably have to, now that I've realized the core theme, I will probably have to like ditch the entire first book at some point, but not right now. I'm doing something else.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you know, editing can be a double-edged sword. I think, so I realized, cause I've recently gone through and I'm still going through edits for, Iron Blooded, that it really needed it. Something Leigh Bardugo, you know, the trad author, says is that every draft zero is not good. And she's absolutely right. So what you read of Iron Blooded on Royal Road is sort of my vastly unedited thoughts, just sort of like spewed in Will's voice on the page. And I really tried to go back and clean a lot of it up, but editing has changed the landscape. It's fixed some glaring holes. And so I'm really hoping people enjoy it, you know, when it comes out, and that it can be a kind of a fun read that leaves you scratching your chin at the end.
I mean, to be quite honest, like the more I think about it, I've been talking to JP Valentine. We met at Dragon Con, and he kind of said, like, no one wants to read my first draft. No one. It's complete OP bullshit. And I mean, like, it's unreadable OP bullshit, because he writes OP characters a lot. But he says that basically, once I'm done with the first draft, I just rewrite the entire story from scratch, because now I know what I'm doing.
Oh yeah.
And I think I might be one of those.
I'm laughing at that because of how true it is. It hurts because it's true.
And to be honest, like, I mean, I've looked at my stuff, right, and I didn't do it right in this last one in Torchbearer, because I kind of like went back through and tried to fix it and tried to like shirk the major work on it. Like, yeah, just like change a little bit here and a little bit there and it'll be fine. No. No.
Yeah, analysis paralysis. Like,
no, that entire book needs its spine ripped out. Oof. So to be honest, like, I will, if I were to do it again, I wouldn't do the first two edits I went on it, because those were less waste of time. Because I tried to apply external fixes to like internal problems. So I would just completely start from scratch and like write again and like basic stuff. Like at the start, why do I have Sam starting out sitting on a throne looking at a city? It's cool. It's romantic. It's like gives her some time to think. Cool. But why not throw some wolves in there?
Yeah. Sometimes leaping right into the action is the way. Or sometimes, like with Iron Blooded, I open up with a lot of questions. So my click-through rate from chapter one, last time I checked, was 100%. So I guess people were like, what the hell is going on? I need to know more. Oof. Which is good, because I was worried it was a little boring. But apparently it was fine.
Yeah. 100%? I'm very sorry. I don't mean to be rude, but that can't be right. Like, no one gets
100%. I might be wrong. Yeah. I can always pop it open and see. Maybe it's changed. But granted, I checked this like halfway through my Rising Stars run, so that might be why.
Oh, okay. No, because like I mean, like this would, that would be like outstanding, like completely outstanding.
Yeah, the first chapter did quite well. I actually think if you're in the order that I posted a picture of it at some point, but it's in there, and I was like, hey, that's cool.
Yeah, sometimes like the like I don't really understand the read through on Royal Road sometimes.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's more complicated.
Yeah, like it's like 100% plus 17. Like, what does that mean? Do people just like click on chapter 17?
Just random note.
And then read? Yeah.
Nah, I kind of built a random number generator, I'm convinced. It just gives you numbers. You're like, oh, all right, cool.
I need to ask Kana at some point. whenever he comes on the podcast, I'm going to ask, like, hey, Kana, like, how can I have 125% of my readers going from chapter 1 to chapter 2? How is that possible? Right?
Man.
So, like, that would be, like, a good explanation. But, yeah. So, like, that's awesome. I mean, obviously, like, your starting questions, right, are very, very good. Because you have that, yeah, you have those questions that you're like, hey, I really want to know why this guy, like, why did this guy die? Why is everyone so fucking paranoid? Why are they, like, why are they trying to shoot at him, but not really? Why does he not know what the fuck is going on? And I'm going to rip you on this. Like, I'm going to joke on you a little bit on this, okay? Like, and why is it not formatted in a normal way?
So true. Oh, my God. Let me tell you a little side story. So, Gaethon's editor, or one of them, bless his heart, when he first got the manuscript, he was beside himself. He was very polite about it himself. But at some point, Rhett was like, oof, yeah, this manuscript's a bit sloppy. And so they showed me how to format on Microsoft. And I now write on Microsoft because, oh, man, it was not pretty.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, cool. I'm going to talk to you about it after the podcast. I don't like that's the thing. Like, but even though like the editing was like that, right? People still click through, and I think that's like something quite outstanding by and of itself, right?
Yeah, and the readers that have, you know, stuck with the story, they're very passionate, and I really love seeing their feedback and their theories. Do you ever get fan theories that really turn your head? Sometimes they're right, or sometimes they're absolutely wrong, and you're like, "That is so cool! I have no idea how you came up with that."
Do I ever get fan theories? No. I have 800 followers. I get like 4 comments per chapter, and most of them are thank you for the chapter. So no.
Oof. Soon.
No. No, not even soon. Like I'm not gonna get like any more followers on the story. Like, it's a very good story. And you should try and read it if you're here. But don't expect lots of numbers going up. Expect lots of psychological damage. Yes. No, like the emotional damage. That's the point. No, like the like I said, I'm gonna not gonna say like, oh, I'm gonna do another rewrite, because that's a meme by this point, but I'm going to like just like push through, write book 2, even though I know that like 100 people are reading it order, and just enjoy it for what it is and share it with the 4 people who enjoy it too.
Hey, I'm one of those 4 and proud.
Yay. There you go. No, like the there's cool shit coming up. There's like guns and nunchucks. So, but the point on it is, if you have this kind of like follow through at the start, it makes it very, very easy. So the start of the story is very important. And if I had done better at the start of the story, or changed it a little bit, I think that would have made it a lot easier to get into. And also, if I had a core theme and there would have been a bit more conflict between the characters, that also would have made the story way better. So at some point I'm going to do it, but not right now.
Yeah, you got a good retrospective, and I think that's part of it too, especially if you're doing a rewrite, going back and saying, you know, this is solidly what works, this is what doesn't, and I know how I want to start to implement that change.
Exactly. And the coolest part is I have the option of actually going back and writing the prequel.
Oh, that'll be fun. Establishing a lot of the the details beforehand.
Yeah. I mean, like, I need to do it anyway. Now the balance would be like, how do I get the mystery? So for everyone who's listening, it was like, what the fuck is he talking about? Like, first of all, go and read Torchbearer or like Genesis of the Sacred Machine. It's my book. But to paraphrase it, like at the beginning of the story, the main character doesn't know what's going on because they wake up in a completely different world than before, but they've been isekai'd before. And now they're like, hey, is this a new world? Is this something else? What's going on? Have I been like teleported somewhere where I don't know where I'm at? Like, shouldn't I be doing something else right now? And I want to keep this mystery somehow. And in the rewrite, that's going to be hard if I have the prequel going, right? So there has to be like some sort of like time skip between the end of the prequel and the start of the like main story. And that's going to be fun, but also hard. But we'll see.
Ooh, yeah, that will be. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And a new challenge. And sometimes that's what we need to get our brain out of a funk. I know that writing mm-hmm. two stories, although it's difficult to juggle and gave mm-hmm. me tendonitis, but I won't get into that. it's really been the palate cleanser that I needed. I feel that I'm getting more out of both because I'm using different parts of my brain to figure different things out.
So what's one thing that you've learned that you would now do differently?
Oh, yeah. Well, my entire launch strategy on Royal Road, which I'm going to say right now, was no strategy. So I knew going into Royal Road, I knew that I was supposed to post every day. In my case, I post twice a day, and I had no backlog. I don't recommend this, by the way. and so I didn't know what Rising Stars was. So... I didn't have any ads, I didn't have any shout-outs or review swaps at the time, I just didn't know what those things were. So, you know, and I would recommend avoiding review swaps as a little aside, just because, you know, a lot of people don't look upon it favorably. I have only one, and so that's, you know, a bit of a different aside, but circling back, my launch strategy is much better with Dungeon, which is being released today. Mm. So now I know mm-hmm. what I didn't before. And that really encompasses sort of like having shout outs lined up, scheduling your releases so that your chapters are coming out around the same time, dropping a certain amount of words. A lot of people say the sweet spot is 20K. I'm doing a little bit under that, but somewhere around there, because having that backlog on Royal Road makes a difference.
You really should do 20K, because the 20K is the cutoff until Royal Road takes you seriously, and any followers you got before that are seriously not counting in your favor. So
we'll see. I don't know if I want to give up that much of my backlog, and I didn't with Iron Blooded, and it did great. So I know I don't need it, but there's also the accidental debuff of if I get on Rising Stars too soon, that's actually will work against.
I mean, like, so the way we conjecture it works, right? I mean, I have not talked to Kana about this, so this is like conjecture. This is not me like spouting anything from Royal Road. Is that the system checks how many reads and followers you have today, like all the stats, like rating, followers. Everything is like weighed and kind of like calculated. So it's also like chapter length and all that kind of stuff. How long people spend reading a chapter, that sort of stuff is also important. And that gets weighed, right? And all gets put together into like a point total. So like the difference from today to yesterday is being put as a point total. And then that point total then gets you placed somewhere on the chart. As opposed to everyone else's point total. But if you are on Rising Stars, you start accumulating a negative count the longer and the higher you're up, right? So as long as a negative count doesn't outweigh the positive count, you'll keep rising because more people are going to click it. And that means that even more people are going to be like, hey, yes, no, yes, no, yes, no, right? And that only kicks in after your story is 20,000 words or longer. Anything before that doesn't count. So I would strongly suggest that you actually, or like, we don't think it counts it probably does kind of probably like slap me over the back of the head for this, but we don't think it really counts. So I would suggest you do 20K. Because if people follow you, like a lot of people follow you because now you're a known quantity and people will know that you've released a new book and they will follow you before you're ready, quote unquote, that will drastically change your rising stars status because you will not get positives, but you will already have a lot of readers. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'd say, if I could do it all over, knowledge is power, and just sort of knowing how things work. And so I get to see what it's like to do an intentional release versus, just fumbling my way through. And then somebody was like, oh, you made number 10 on Rising Stars. And I said, what the hell is that? And then, you know, from that point on, then I locked in because I started getting advice from Sean. Craze Code was actually one of the people during these times that predicted my success and gave me advice. He looked at my numbers and was like, oh, you'll hit number one. And I was like, there's no way.
Yeah.
There was way. He knew. He's done this whole song and dance before. He's a great guy, honestly. And he's given me a lot of really solid advice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Craze is like a great dude. Like Sean Craze. There's some other people like who always like give away like free stuff, like Lazy Llama, also like a great author, who just gives away like advice and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. He helped me do one of my new ads, a stick figure ad. Mm-hmm. Love it. Yeah. Fabulous.
Yeah, he's really, really cool. Good at this. Okay, so communication is super important for you. Okay, and something that you've learned now, like we were talking about this earlier, the whole like connecting to other authors thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Networking is a lot more powerful than some think. But, you know, it isn't just about like cold spamming people, but having earnest conversations in the community, which circles into, I think, being a part of the community. You know, you don't have to be as involved in the community if you're published with Trad. You are the face of your book. And so you kind of do your own thing. But in progression fantasy and lit RPG, the communities are popping. They're so active. I'm in the subreddit all the times. Oh, yeah. And I get all my recommendations from those subreddits. I engage all the time just because I'm a fan and, you know, a writer. And I think that that's a crucial piece to being successful in this space that is sometimes maybe overlooked or skipped.
I think it's the most crucial space, the thing. If you're looking at it, there aren't really all that many authors who are like really big who are not active in the community or in a community in some way, shape or form. Like some people like create their own orbit, right? So Shirtaloon, for example, like has his own orbit, but even Shirt posts on Reddit every once in a while, and like so does Zolgarth, right? Some people like they're more shy, they more like stay to their own Discords, but they have their own Discords. There's like lots of people there.
Right.
And this is like something that's super important. So this is not, as you said, like Trad, where you can just sit in your quiet chamber and not do any networking and then like give this to a publisher and like hope that they will like see you favorably. I know for a fact that all the publishers look at the numbers. They look at your numbers on Royal Road. So if you have like the decision between like, hey, I want to release this on Royal Road or not, if you want to release it, you better make sure it releases well, right? Because even if it's a great story, if it only has like 800 followers, no one wants to publish it.
Wipes tear.
Nah, it's fine. I'll just rewrite it again. I recently posted a meme where I said like, the rewrites will continue until readership improves.
So, the readers are like, please.
No, please stop. Please post something. You're like, no, you won't like that story. But like the shout outs to some of my readers, like they're like, there's people there who have been reading all three of them. And they're like, hey, this is cool now. Like this has changed. Oh, that's so dope that like you like added this new stuff now. Like this is actually really cool, really encouraging. And I know I was a bit down before before like an hour ago or whatever, but I'm actually like, I really enjoy the story. So it's good.
Absolutely.
And, okay.
You got, man, I keep telling you, you got the ingredients. I look forward to seeing, you know, you fully apply them to whatever project you choose or to the project you're working on whenever you get the chance. But I know you're also balancing so much more. So, like, I had the buff of, I mean, it's sad, but I had the buff of not working, which meant I could devote all of my time to this.
I'm not even going to joke that I wish I was like getting fired because I really don't. I like that job. But on the other hand, like when I wrote Torchbearer, most of Torchbearer, I was unemployed. And I was just enjoying this routine, getting up every morning and doing the same thing every day. That was awesome. And I want to try and get there again, but like life gets in the way. Like I got to go to like my company's headquarters next week. So suddenly I can no longer do my morning routine, which is like getting up, getting my shake, writing for 3 hours and then starting work. Like I cannot do this. And that's a bit, it's annoying because once you get kicked out, it's hard to get back in.
Oh yeah. Yep. And routine is everything in this space. Maintaining that momentum, especially, I will say being on Rising Stars, especially in the top seven, is grueling because you have to absolutely maintain that pace, and any lagging or falling behind that you do will bite you in terms of numbers. And so just be ready for it emotionally and mentally, because man, there were nights that I had to stay up until midnight just finishing and editing a chapter so I could get it out. And if you look at my release schedule, there are some like 1 a.m. releases in there. Having
a backlog is very important.
Yep.
And I want to like take this moment here like for a real quick shout out. So my editor Jamie has a wonderful podcast that he's doing, and I'm shouting him out right now because today is Friday and the podcast is going up on Sunday, and he will probably spend all Saturday editing this pod. So Jamie, you're awesome. Thank you very, very much. And also he has a podcast called, and I need to look this up again because it was a very good title, but I forgot. So give me 1 second here. So it's called the Netflix Gaming Club, and it shows you everything about, or talks about everything or every single game that they have on Netflix. So most people don't even know this. Like you have like a gaming subscription of Netflix games, and they're actually really good. Most of them are like really, really good. So it's like Reigns is on there. Spiritfarer is on there. And Jamie and their crew have talked about all of them. You should really check it out. If I want to find out, check below the podcast. You'll find it out. Cool. Thank you for letting me do this real quick, Breeze. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Yep, okay, good. It's good to shout him out. Actually, that sounds pretty cool. I'll probably check it out when it drops.
Thank you. Yeah, it's great. Like it has like great audio quality too, and Jamie knows what he's doing. Can really recommend him. Super professional dude.
Yeah, Netflix games. Yeah. I didn't even know. I'm like, now I'm curious.
Oh, they're really, really, really good, and like the you can get some recommendations from the pod.
Sweet.
You should.
Absolutely.
Okay, so what's a book that you love and why is it awesome?
Oh God, I already hyped it up, but I'm going to talk about it anyway. It's got to be Red Rising. Oh, that one too. That's my favorite series of all time. My wife has to listen to me talk about it all the time. But it's a great example of how first person got the pacing, the characterization, and the world building correct, because you know, first person can be a bit limiting when you're writing it, and yet Red Rising's scale is huge, and in every book it gets bigger. And I just think that especially the original trilogy and even what follows is incredible. He's Pierce Brown just really knows his stuff. You know, Darrow pops off the page. He's an easy character to like. Even though he says shift the paradigm like 16 times in one chapter at some point, in the first book. I love, you know, if you like progression fantasy, seeing him grow, you know, seeing from where he starts out to where he ends up and hopefully inevitably will end up is just, it's an incredible journey.
You were talking about like shifting the paradigm, right? About like 16 times.
So many times.
I've recently been listening to Cradle, previously on Code RPG. We talked about this. Well, I found that even with Travis's like narration talents, like I've got an ear for this now because I'm been editing audio and I've been editing books and stuff like that. Will Wright actually repeats words not uncommonly often, right? And it's something that's also like super important to me. Like, you can shift the paradigm 16 times in one chapter and still have like a really, really good book. Like an international bestseller, right?
Oh, yeah.
So I'm often very critical about my own stuff, so I never want to repeat a word like something like that. I still do, but I don't want to. But I think something for the listeners is like, being overly critical of your own stuff is normal, but maybe not helpful all the time.
True. And getting caught up in that quagmire of where it's like, for sure to Luna and I, it's always said, everybody said, he said, then she said, and you know, it gets out of hand.
Absolutely. First, like, oh, for sure. It's inexorable.
Oh no. It's always something.
Yeah, like it's the word inexorable. He likes that word. I like it too. I've kind of like been poking fun of it a little bit, but what's yours? What's your besides said?
Oh, gee, I don't even know, but I'm sure my editor will make it very apparent soon.
Do you have you're using Word, right? Because in Scrivener you can check it out. You can like look up how often do you use the following word, and I think like my most used word is like Zephyro, because obviously.
The word gaze and eyes. I'm always using eyes as a descriptor constantly.
Ooh.
And I think I need to calm it down because everybody knows what everyone else's eyes look like. Now, the rest of the descriptions, those need some work. But
I also have that. Like, it's easy. Like, it's this thing that you look at, right? And then you're like, hey, what does the rest of this guy look like? I mean, most people are just focusing on the eyes because it's cool.
Yep, absolutely. And shows so much emotion, you know, whether they're narrowed or, you know, there's depth to them, or someone's looking down to the side, or someone meets your gaze suddenly, what do they know, you know? And so much expression can be showed. So I find using that as a bit of a narrative tool is a lot of fun.
Yeah. Sometimes I go like, hey, I got to do something else here. Like, I cannot be doing just like people looking at other stuff.
Yeah, right? Everyone's gazing at everyone all the time in Iron Blooded. I don't know.
Man, you know what to say about the gaze.
All right, that was a good one.
Yeah, thank you.
I'll give you that one.
I've actually kind of liked, you know, there's this website called I think it's like Writer's Thesaurus, or Emotional Thesaurus. It spawned out of this like book series that these two people wrote. That's really, really good. Like, yeah, you can use ChatGPT for it too if you want to, but I found that website actually more helpful than ChatGPT, because ChatGPT like throws out some weird shit sometimes, and with that page you can find physical descriptions way better. So for example, if like your character is like angry, how do you show that? And they have like 15 different ways of showing it physically, like from their posture or whatever, and then they have like actions that they do and like how it feels internally and how like it's really, really cool. Don't overuse it, because I don't think I ever said like I felt sad in the first draft of Torchbearer. I just always like described it like the most beautiful ways, and people are like, but how does you really feel? I'm like, oh shit, yeah. Probably should write that down.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got some quality content in terms of talking about like different literary tools and writing. And there's different ones depending on genre too. Like, one of the things I see super often in fantasy romance is alliteration. Man, there's so much alliteration all the time. And you sometimes I love it, sometimes I hate it. It really just depends.
I think it's not bad if you use it as a tool.
Exactly. One of the many tools in the arsenal.
Exactly. It's not the shape of the tools, how you use it? Okay.
Yeah. And I would argue, too, that, you know, some people think that writing to market is selling out. I think it's more a tool that you wield to produce results that have a chance of doing better with your audience and connecting with your audience. Okay. And so that's something, you know, writing a military lit RPG was already out there because there aren't a lot of them. There are a couple, but there aren't a lot of them that are out that are very big. And so I knew that I needed to study and understand the market and the community first. I had to read what people liked, what they didn't. I had to, you know, sort of, you know, get a look behind the curtain of, well, what books are doing well and why. And so I listened to audiobooks and I read novels and I made notes and I thought, you know, okay, now that I have this knowledge in the back of my head, how can I best apply this? How can I make my story resonate with the readers that are like me and really enjoy this genre?
Yes. Or you could not do any of that and write 250,000 words of a woman who's like really depressed. I mean, I'm joking, but like I've struggled with the whole idea of like writing to market. First, I was never the kind of guy who was like, oh no, that's bad or like dumb or whatever. I just didn't know how, because like I knew what I liked, and as far as I could tell, what I was writing was what I liked. So, por qué does it not work, right? But yeah, like the more I kind of like listen to Cradle, the more I realize like, okay, it's about the winning. And it's about the lit RPG is a very hopeful genre in general, right? So there always has to be some sort of like upside there. Like the main character has to come out of whatever conflict, better than they went in some way, shape or form. Like absolute losses are fun to write and they provide maximum emotional damage, but they should be used really sparingly. Do you have any other like insights that could help people think more about like how to write to market, quote unquote?
Sure. And I'm definitely still learning. But I think that when you're thinking of writing a certain, you know, sub drama or sub trope or sub genre, I think it would be really important to sort of go through and read the stories on Royal Road or the books that have done it really well and that people like, and then go through and try to pinpoint why. So take your notepad and write down the things that you liked about it, the things that you didn't, and then go through some of the comments and say, okay, you know, people wish there was a little more X. And then, so you're just gathering information or data, and that data stays in your head and can be used to sometimes, if you allow it, inform your decisions. So you can say, well, you know, I really wanted him to lose this battle, but I know that's not as popular in the genre. So what I can do is I can have him win barely, but at what cost?
Yeah,
and have the same or similar impacts. So I think, yeah, sort of like respecting the market and the community and saying, hey, I understand you. I know what you want and I want to deliver. But also saying, well, I've also got to tell my own story and it's going to, you know, have its twists and turns. It's going to hurt you just a little bit. If it's me, it's probably going to hurt you a lot. I'm sorry. but, you know, and then the finished product is something that has the opportunity to get seen by more people. And I would argue, once you get bigger and you get, you know, in front of more eyes, you might be able to kind of stray away from the norm a little bit, do something a little different and see how that goes, you know?
I mean, like you were talking about, like sometimes it's going to hurt a little bit and sometimes it hurts a lot. I personally wake up every morning and pray at my altar to Stephen He and say a lot of like maximum emotional damage. No, but like that's like it's a bit hard to say, right? Because like Torchbearer 1 is like so different from Torchbearer 2, or like that's the second book. Because in the second book, I actually like try to like steer this car around, and I'm actually like writing some really cool really dope, like, power fantasy moments. I still make the same mistakes sometimes, but yeah, sure. But it's exactly what, as you said, right? You learn from the, you listen with intent, you read with intent, and then you take that and apply it to your own writing and kind of twist it around a little bit and just think like, hey, you know what? What if I don't make her lose here? Like, just like you said, right? And how could I make this cool? But yeah, it's all coming together, and it's kind of a little bit sad because I know not many people are gonna like read it because then they don't get through book one, but it is what it is. Oh, but yeah. I mean, like, for your next book, I have high hopes.
Hey, and sometimes we write things, you know, I call them the books of the soul. Sometimes we write things that are for us and for our hearts, and I think that's incredibly important. Others may look down on that in some capacity, but as a writer, it's incredibly important to have the freedom, right, to be creative. Mm-hmm. Because if you're only ever writing to genre, you are sometimes a little bit constrained.
Yeah. And I think it makes it, like, it feels a bit samey, like it feels formulaic at some point if you don't like write
right.
for yourself.
Exactly.
Have you listened to Raven's Daggers? You've listened to the Roundtable podcast, right?
I think so, yeah. That one with him. Yeah. And then another one, like, with Actus and XK, which was hilarious. Yeah.
I still have that meme, by the way. It's important to use it. So Raven's Dagger operates on the formula of, like, one for thee and one for me, which I think is very cool motto. He doesn't even know where he stole it from, but I'll just accredit it to him. It's like you write one book for yourself and then one book for the market and one book for yourself and one book for the market. And some of these, I think, like, right now, like Evil Antagonist, like, holy cap. Yeah, that went through the roof. And we did not believe that would go through the roof. Because it's a lesbian sci-fi Warhammer 40K story with space clowns. And, like, who wants to read that? Apparently a lot of people want to read
that.
Right?
Love that.
Yeah. Like, it's just plain awesome. Like, starts with the main character called Evil Antagonist. That's the real name. Like, in zero G, and the ship that she's on is, like, making a full break, and everyone is, like, getting pushed into their seats, and she's, like, walks casually through the door, like, hey, what's up, guys? Yeah, it's fun. It's a really, really good book. And it's, like, it's a Raven's Dagger book, so you know what you're getting into, but yeah, that's also my kind of, like, my second shout out here, I guess. So, but speaking of shout outs, what's a shout out? Who's a shout out? Why do you shout them out?
Ooh, I have a couple. So, first of all, it's got to be Craze Code. Absolutely love that guy. He's one of my closest friends now, and he's really helped me even early on and now. Him and I talk pretty much every day. It's just shooting the shit with him is a pleasure. But he has a webtoon or two coming out, you know, that I may or may not have seen a couple slides of, that's coming out in, I think, November. So that will be Key Equals MC Squared. And that one is going to be absolutely epic. If you haven't read the series and you're, you know, into cultivation with some humor in it, a little bit of darkness and some epic fight scenes, I really recommend that series. You can start with First Law of Cultivation. And Fourth Law of Cultivation just came out. I think it was either yesterday or the day before. So.
Ooh, nice. Okay.
And then there's also a Discord that I found helpful. So it is called Ink Masters. And it has several people. I think, I don't know if you're familiar. Do you know Fiddle Soup? He's, I think, one of the guys that runs it.
Nope.
Yeah, he's pretty awesome. He's on Royal Road. And then there's Emery's Ambrosius. He wrote Infernal Paladin, which was on, I think it still is on Rising Stars. It's pretty fun.
Oh, okay.
System is kind of
the counter take to Santa Summon Skeletons?
Yeah, it's pretty awesome too. And it's got, like, a revenge arc in it, which, look, we all love our revenge arcs. So, and yeah, that that Discord. Fubby Wubby is also in there. He's got a funny name, but he wrote Terra Mythica. So, and those guys, they're really stand-up guys. Like, they will help you if you are a noob, a beginner, and you're like, I'm really intimidated. I don't know how to go about posting my story on Roro Road. Can you give me some advice? They will jump on it. So any new writers that are like, man, I want to get this thing started, but I don't know where to start, that Discord's pretty great.
Yeah, it's pretty dope. Okay. My shoutouts are pretty boring. My shoutouts this time are literally just going to go to Ethan Books. Hi, Red. And also the people at Podium and people at Portal and Legion and Shadow Alley Press and Mountaindale and all the other publishers, because I've met so many of them, and I'm going to meet many more of them, and they're super cool people. And you should check out the websites, because there might be some books that you haven't read yet. And it's always a place for more books. Okay. With that all being said and done, Rhys, any last words before we move into the Patreon stuff?
Oh, no. I don't think I have anything off the top of my head. We are good to roll on in.
Well, you have furry ears on the top of your head.
Yeah, that's true. I love this avatar. It's so
cute. Isn't it awesome? Yeah. we had some fun animating it before the podcast started. It was really fun.
The technical difficulties worked out really well. The result.
Yeah, like the laser eyes. God, can you imagine like a cat with like laser pointer eyes?
Anybody watching this would be like, my eyes.
Yeah, it would be animal cruelty. Like, because it would always be like the points would always be like, get it? Because laser pointer? Okay, good. If you want more of this like really, really deep and intricate talk about cats with laser pointer eyes, you can head over to my Patreon and become a patron if you want to. Otherwise, we're also going to be talking more about books and writing and all relaxing and taking a bit more chill approach to the entire thing. So if you want to know more about Rhys, know more about their writing, or know more about what's up and what we're looking forward to, then please consider subscribing to my Patreon. Otherwise, this has been it. Thank you so much for listening and or watching, and I'll see you next time. And if you're on Patreon, the show goes on.